Did you get a bit of a fright? Lion bugger. How are you? You alright? That's the way. G'day. How are you? That's the way. What have we got here? B. Excuse me, please. Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you very much. Ooh, uncross your legs, love. Has no one ever told you that before? I think you're in my seat. Only joking. Very comfy it is too, I might add. Call me at the lodge. G'day, Australia.
Well, on the line, I have Terry Serio, who has, well, he won a 2007 Helpman Award for Best Supporting Actor in the musical Keating, playing Bob Hawke and Howard. Also, he's done films, Running on Empty, Died with a Falafel in His Hand. He's been so many television productions, Shout, The Story of Johnny O'Keefe, Police Rescue Blue Heelers, all of those shows. And also, obviously, on the stage in as an actor, but also as a musician. We're going to delve into his life and see how he got to where he is. Welcome to Stages, Terry.
Regina, hi.
Hi. So where do you hail from? Where were you born? Where did you begin life?
Western Australia. And I grew up between the city and a farm northeast of Perth, in a place called Wongan Hills. I was there for a long time, and I kind of, then we moved to another place, another district north of there, you know, when I was kind of in my mid-teens. But the weird thing was, is that I always had an interest in theatre. I mean, from my first year of school, right through high school and then beyond, I did a theatrical production every year at school. It was just one of those weird sort of things. It just became part of my life. And luckily also my mum was very interested in theatre and also took me to the theatre in Perth.
Right.
And, you know, in bigger towns over the years as well. So I saw some amazing things.
Like what? Is there anything that you can remember from the time?
Oh, just like all sorts of things, but, you know, like high drama. I mean, I remember this, you know, I must have been like 5 or 6 or something and seeing this incredible production of this drama set in like some, I don't know what it was about. I just remember the theatricality of it. It was set in like a camp. And it was camp in the sense that it was like a Depression era production where things were obviously hard, where a house had a kind of a canvas lean to and gas lamps and things like that and all of, and but the world created transported me. I because it was live, I felt like I was actually part of it. You know, I mean, I love watching Netflix and movies and all of that stuff, but I don't ever feel, I always feel like there's a barrier between me and the world. It's kind of like a kind of...
Your fourth wall.
Well, it's like a force, you know, you can't break that, whereas in the theatre, if you wanted to, you could get up out of your seat and walk up onto the stage if you wanted to. True today, you know, there is that equation that says, I am in it. If I have a heart attack all of a sudden, or I'm suddenly having some, you know, emotional meltdown or something, it will impact the people on the stage. You know, it's that is the reality of it. You are in the room with the actors. And I think that was the thing that really somehow
The world
that you enter into, you don't know what it's going to be, and each experience is different, and you are part of it as opposed to, you know, like an outsider looking down into it. You know, you're actually in that world. You know,
you're not the fly. You are the person. You are part of it. Not
absolutely
the fly watching. Yeah. So was your mum particularly interested in the theatre? Was she theatrical? You know, was it something she practiced?
No, she didn't. But she had a natural theatrical flair and was a great storyteller. And, she was also, you know, vivacious and funny and had a real sense of comedy and drama. But, you know, she took me to see things like Cabaret, you know, and like that, like Cabaret at the Playhouse Theatre in Perth. And it was, again, it was an amazing production. I think it was one of those things where you just go, oh, my God, look at these people. They're just having a wild time. And it kind of blew me away. There was so much, you know, sense of circus and mystery and, you know, the classic grease paint and lights, magic. You know, magical stuff.
So what happened out of school then? Did you, you know, go straight? Did you go to acting school? What happened, like, out of, you know, you've done all of these productions?
Yeah, but there was a really important thing that happened to me while I was at school. I was always an odd kid because I never felt really particularly comfortable in a lot of kind of situations because I'd grown up alone by myself on a farm and I had, you know, I was a thinking kid, you know. I kind of analyzed stuff in my head, tried to work all sorts of stuff out, you know, and some things seemed like a mystery to me. And I kind of, the school I went to, we were learning pretty sort of classical kind of literature, really. And then we got a teacher who started to draw us into kind of a different kind of style of thing. Well, or somehow or other, we ended up going to see Waiting for Godot at the Octagon Theatre in Perth. This was a stunning production, and again, to this day, it is formative things in my life because seeing that play made me realise there was another way of looking at the world in a similar way that I looked at the world, the absurdity of reality, the absurdity of what we think of as life. And I've got to say that production I think was one of the best productions I've ever seen because I've never seen a better production of Waiting for Godot. There was often Waiting for Godot is played as kind of comedy, and it is comic, but it's black, it's dark, and it's existential comedy. It's, you know, it's absurdist. You know, it's not played for laugh. The waiting is the absurdity of it. And the power of that has to be addressed. If that's not addressed, the play for me doesn't work. You know, I saw it a couple of years ago at the STC, and it was a very good production.
Oh, yes.
It was banal and kind of missed the point for me because it was too light. There was no sense of the brooding sense of, like, futility. And that's one of the things about he understood that the human endeavor is basically kind of
pointless,
a useless enterprise because in the end we're all just going to cark it. So what?
Yeah. You know?
But he addresses what that for? In the way that's so powerful.
Absolutely.
And that's what got me.
Yeah. Nothing to be done. Nothing to be done. And when did you come to Sydney?
I was in a band called the Elks and came to Sydney.
I was going to say, so are you playing music at the same time as well as all of this? Did you start from an early age music as well?
Yeah, I was always playing music and always doing acting. It was always a kind of one thing went with the other. I also began to do musical theatre as well. So there was a combination. I was doing straight theatre, musical theatre, playing in bands. You know, it was a kind of a whole mess of stuff that it all seemed to kind of gel together. We were touring, you know, playing, you know, 300 dates a year kind of thing. And
wow.
You know, doing the whole countdown thing. And
I did. Look, I have to say, I had a look online at some of your, you know, on YouTube, and there are some, I saw a countdown. It all comes running back, is it? 1982. It's so great. And also the Donnie Sutherland. There's a Donnie Sutherland interview with you talking about, I don't know, a play in 1983, Traffic Tansy, I think it is.
Trafford Tansy, yeah. Yeah, it was set in a wrestling ring. A whole bunch of stuff they got. Can I just segue just a brief using that Trafford Tansy thing, which was set in a wrestling ring at the Seymour Centre.
Yeah.
One of the jobs I lost out of the coronavirus thing was a play called Dubbo Championship Wrestling, which was going to be on as a musical at the Hayes Theatre. We were supposed to be rehearsing in May and performing all of June. Suddenly I was back in a wrestling ring after all these years.
Wow. And
it was the strangest thing. But then the coronavirus came and took that little bit of kind of, you know, strange synchronicity away from me, you know, that coming full circle in a way. And I was like, okay, bummer.
So do you have a favourite role that you've played on stage?
I think it would have to be the John Howard character in Keating. I think because the timing of that play was, we were caught up in the whole zeitgeist of the time, the changing political landscape between the John Howard years and the sense that there was a Labor government going to come.
Something was brewing.
Something was brewing, and you could feel it in your bones, you know. And then so playing John Howard in that production and having the Neil Armfield, the director, giving me the ability to do some improvisation, because I played Bob Hawke as well in that production. So both of those characters, I had some leeway to improvise some little dialogue bits. And that gave me a great deal of pleasure. Bob was the everyman hero, and Howard was the archetypal villain.
Antithesis.
totally the antithesis of Bob, you know. Yeah. And I've got to say that gave me so much pleasure. I've got to say, to be part of that zeitgeist, but also then being able to create a character that I had to kind of love at the same time everybody else hated, you know. I mean, I'd have people standing up in the theatre yelling at me.
You know. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, you know. I'd be walking past them doing my dithery John thing, and they'd be like, stand up, you'll be gone next year, you'll be gone.
You know, when I watch that again, I can see, I don't know, the joy in doing it as well. Like, it's fantastic to watch, and just those little idiosyncrasies, and I suppose you get to, I don't know, magnify them. A lot of his little quirkies, the way he walks, and the little splutters, and the little, when you walk back to the stage and you've mumbled something under your breath, and it's so great. But you can see your enjoyment of the role as well, in both of them actually. When I watched the Hawk one again, I just felt this warmth and this, like, you know, immense, I don't know, there's something about that production that, yeah, it was showing us ourselves as well.
I had something, what I call magic dust sprinkled on it, because the wherever we did it, from the time we opened at the Belvoir Theatre to the time we did our final performance, like we toured all over Australia, but we did our final performance at the Seymour Centre. It never lost its energy from the first show to the last. It just did the work for you. It was magical.
Well, there's not much going on at the moment. It's hard to do anything now. Are you watching anything online? Have you seen anything of interest?
I'm very excited to.
Yeah.
On Sunday morning at 11 a.m. I am going to watch the production of Orphans, which is being a live reading
Okay.
So there are 3 days, 22 hours, 28 minutes, and 7 seconds, 6 seconds, 5 seconds, 4 seconds,
countdown.
Three.
Easter Sunday, yes.
Easter Sunday.
Yeah.
We will be joining New Yorkers at 9 p.m. on the Saturday night. It'll be still Saturday night in New York. 9 p.m. on Saturday night, 11 a.m. in Sydney on Sunday morning. Los Angeles on Saturday at 6 p.m. that'll be on. So this is a worldwide event. Toronto, Canada, 9 p.m. London, 2 a.m. in the morning. This will be streamed live, a play reading with, let me just spell this out to you, Alec Baldwin. Alec Baldwin is playing the character of what is he playing? He's playing Harold, the gangster. In Orphans. Then we have Andrew Henry, who is the artistic
our
director
local?
Of the old Fitz Theatre Company, the Red Line Productions home, is playing Treat. And Aaron Glenane, who's actually one of my ex-students, actually.
Oh.
And Aaron is an exceptional actor, and he's been on in things like Snowpiercer and Picnic at Hanging Rock and 68 Whiskey and about to do 2067. He's an incredibly upward trajectory. What is it?
Upwardly mobile
young man who is doing wonderful things. So those three men will be doing the Orphans production, and that production is a wonderful show. Strangely, about a brother played by Andrew, who doesn't want his brother to go out, and his brother is his younger brother, and his brother stays at home and watches repeats of The Price is Right and underlines kind of things in the newspapers and books that seem important to him as he's trying to understand the world, but he's terrified about going out and catching something, getting something that kills him. And that's never been a more relevant time.
Are you kidding? To put it on. That's exciting. I can't wait. Wow. See, it stop us. The show must go on somehow, some way. We will do it.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing I'm trying to work. I've been putting up some musical performance things. I've been doing a few songs in my bed, in my back room, and they've been getting a great reaction. So I might do a live concert sometime, but I also might do I've been doing some writing about my life as a kind of an imbiber. I'm thinking about I might do actually like a kind of semi-performance of that. I'm starting to write stuff down, and I might do that as a series of little sequences.
Vignettes. Okay. Now, what we're talking about is drinking or other things as well that but you've given that up. You found that it wasn't working for you.
Gave that up quite a few years ago now. And I've been leading a very
sober life. Sobering.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to say, is it still hard, though? Is it?
No, not anymore. It was only hard for the first couple of years.
Right.
Because you have to relearn how to live. With yourself, you know, whether the only thing you've got up your sleeve is yourself. You know?
Yeah.
You can't go, well, I'm just going to get messed up. You know, you actually have to kind of go, you know what, I'm just going to have to deal with me.
Oh, look, Terry, it has been such a joy to talk with you today.
My pleasure.
Thanks to Terry Serio for joining us.
My right hand man's a charmer, the smoothest of the smooth. He's got a knack for every bolt, a tongue for every groove. A pleasurer as treasurer, create.